Okay, admit it. You are just a little bit jealous that everyone's favorite ginger dreamboat, Prince Harry, finally tied the knot this past weekend to African-American actress Meghan Markle. Like all past ceremonies, this royal wedding was broadcast all over the world, but this time with close-up reaction shots of all the A-listers in attendance crying, smiling, laughing, and wincing at the lavish affair. Today, self-proclaimed gay comedy terrorist Matt Brown joins us to take a look at Meghan and Harry's wedding extravaganza. Also joining us is Matt's good Judy, Cody Melcher, who just happens to own a red baby grand piano that once belonged to Sir Elton John. Plus, Meghan's Reverend Michael Curry said if we could harness the power of love, humanity would have a second renaissance. I'm Fausto Fernos, and this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of the support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Become a member and listen to 14 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Or put a tip in our tip jar and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you for your support. Our guest today is a self-proclaimed comedy terrorist. A gay comedy terrorist.
Oh, my God.
Matt Brown, who is jealous that Prince Harry chose another mixed dame to tie the knot. And not you.
I am so angry, and I'll say it twice. I cannot believe, because I am also like a light-skinned, mixed-race, biracial diva, and I want to know why I didn't make the cut. Like, what does Meghan Markle have that I don't? Don't answer that fucking question. What does she
vagina?
Have that I don't?
Well, you're a rising star in Chicago's comedy scene.
I lie about being an actress just like her. We have a lot in common.
And you have a thick, beautiful, rich, full lips like Amanda Lepore.
It's the lips, it's the voice, but these are free and mine, baby.
And your voice sounds like Amanda Lepore.
I get Amanda Lepore, I get Kathleen Turner, I get just everything about me is reminiscent of someone's grandmother, and I'm not going to be ashamed about it anymore.
And you watched you stayed up till 4 a.m. watching the royal wedding?
Well, I mean, I don't sleep anyway, but that's a different conversation.
Oh, you're insomniac.
Oh, like yeah.
And your mind is racing. Because you've been meth all afternoon.
I wish I was a drug person. I'd have an excuse. I'm just like this.
Also joining us is Cody Melcher, who knows more about our founding father's sex lives than your average drag queen knows about Beyonce.
Hello. Thank you. I love that. Just my new thing for this podcast is Cody Melcher, weird history buff. All right. That's my professional title
now.
So,
Cody, America mostly doesn't care about the royal wedding.
Well, this one actually had a lot of America, because it's an American wedding.
And now there's
well.
An American.
Right.
There.
So this one actually had a lot of American interest. I also purchased a tea towel that's great. It was a beautiful tea towel. I posted it on Instagram. Check it out.
Historically speaking, is this the first time like an American has married a British royal?
No. So there's I literally have been brought on as a history expert in this. No,
Cody
actually,
reads.
Famously, the King of England had to step down because he married an American divorcee. Mm-hmm. And then that's if you've seen the King's speech, that was his little brother because he had to step down. He was forced out because it was a scandal. So yes,
the Wallace affair.
Wallace Stevens.
You mean the great film by Madonna, We, or W/E.
Yeah, sure.
That shows a lingering photographs and camera shots of Wallace's bathroom items.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you ever seen that movie?
I've seen little bits of it.
Yeah, it's like Madonna loves shit, tchotchkes and crap and bathroom products. And so when she's the film director, and when she's given free rein to tell a story about two people and their love affair and how, you know, it challenged a nation, all yada yada, she decides to spend about 5 minutes shooting, I'm not joking,
yeah,
the
products in her bathroom.
Yeah. She's an Italian-American girl from Michigan. She likes chat. Okay, why should she have to be someone else? And then my whole favorite thing about Wallace was that basically her whole rumor was that, like, she learned how to give blowjobs in China, and that's my girl.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
that's my girl.
I think her last name was actually Simpson, just so I can correct it before I get emails. But, yeah.
And Wallace Simpson was her name.
I said, Stevens earlier because white girl names all sound the same. But,
pretty much.
And so, yeah, that was also the Nazi king, so that's a fun time as well.
He was a German apologist.
I would edge him over into supporter. Yeah, calling him a German apologist is like saying that Coco Chanel only lightly dated Nazis. Like,
oh wow.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, she dated like a major like head of the military.
So why do you think those uniforms look so good?
What? Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Those uniforms looked fabulous.
Well, yeah,
Hugo
Boss.
Yeah, those uniforms look so good because of Hugo Boss. He literally designed the SS uniforms.
It's all connected.
That's how he got like his start, which is why I don't wear Boss.
My poor mother, who is like barely hanging by a thread with living with diabetes and had a stroke, breast cancer, hip replacement, knee replacement surgery.
This is a strong woman.
Stayed up till 4 in the morning to watch the royal wedding.
Yeah.
She and I have so much in common.
Did you watch the whole thing, Matt, throughout? Like,
I just watched Meghan's mom give that little boy with the afro playing the cello the stink eye. Because you know she didn't ask for that in her life. Like, I don't even know who he was or what he was doing there. I think he won some competition. I'm bored. I'm bored. Doria Ragland did not leave her social work practice to go watch that. You know she was sitting there thinking, I'm a 62-year-old black woman from Cleveland, Ohio, and my daughter is getting married in front of all these white people, and they couldn't get me, Tina Turner. Like, you know. You know. She just wanted to do something nice and easy, and they wouldn't give it to her.
I love the idea that you were just watching the mom cam. Like, there's this one camera that was just on her, and you're just watching her slow disappointment.
Well, that's the breathtaking aspect of this wedding, and I'm not sure if it was true for other weddings, is they set up cameras to beautifully capture all the A-listers' reactions. Mm-hmm. And so Meghan Markle's co-star from a TV show, he was sitting in the audience and kept making this stink face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And later on, there he had to explain on social media that somebody, I guess, had really bad breath and kept farting throughout the
I
whole
time. I want to know
who
was sitting next to and behind. Like, let's get those photos while we're there.
I want to know who's farting. And
who's got swamp ass at a wedding? That's what I want to know.
Just all of the House of Lords. That was the thing that took me away was that, like, yeah, there were a ton of cameras. I kept trying to think of, like, camera placement and, like, what it looked like if you were looking forward. Because there has to be, like, a sea of cameras along the edge there or something.
Churches are full of secrets. Like, think about it.
That's, I mean, true. Like, especially the Church of England.
You know, with all those cameras that would have caught the priest molesting the boys. Oh, that's a Catholic church.
This is Church of England. They don't have enough arm strength for that. But
they just stop the boys from going to the dentist. They're much cooler.
I watched enough of it, but there weren't enough Rowan Atkinson audience shots for me, so I tuned in and out.
Did you guys think it was very moving to see a strong African-American presence in a very formal British environment?
Well, she doesn't even identify as African-American, though.
Yeah, she's just the Queen of England. That's it.
Yeah. She's a Duchess.
Oh, we're talking about Meg. I thought we were talking about the Queen of England. Sorry.
Elizabeth has always been a close black sister.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Always,
I'm sorry. You've seen the hats. This is Sunday in Alabama. What are we talking about?
You're from Texas, you know.
Yeah. It's like,
that lime green dress was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. She looked fabulous.
You know, you can chroma key her dress. And a lot of people do this on the internet. And they just put, like, all sorts of shit on the Queen Elizabeth's clothing.
Just the flag. That would be great. Just the British flag at every wedding.
Well, you know, with dye sublimation, you could, like, she could print some amazing clothes. You know?
When you said dye sublimation, I thought you were just talking about when Princess Diana gave Prince Charles blowjobs. I'm sorry.
You mean twice.
I got confused. I'm sorry. I'm only half baked. I keep getting confused. I'm sorry.
So, Meghan Markle's bishop. Who spoke, the black guy, who was not the white guy, the black minister. Okay. There's this, you know, because you're watching it on YouTube and you're scrubbing to get to him. Because, you know, you see on the internet, like, he's so animated, and all the British people are just, like, you know, stuffily reacting to his passion. He says, if we can harness the power of love, it will be like a new renaissance.
Which I think that's true. If we were all just like not assholes to each other, reach out and touch somebody's hand. Diana Ross has been saying it since 1972. Like, come on.
But that isn't that just kind of like a RuPaul, you know, aphorism?
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
it's just like, it's, everybody say love, no shit. You know?
It's every Lin-Manuel Miranda tweet. So, sure.
I don't, I really appreciated that they were singing Stand By Me there. And it's like,
I did cry during that, actually.
I was really moved.
I'm a soft boy.
Missing my baby, my husband, who's doing secret projects. Yeah. We cannot talk about
the science.
The science.
Yes.
But so to me, I was just like, oh my God, I'm so lonely.
You have Jesse to hold on to.
I have been like barely, hugging that poor dog with an inch of his life.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm a dog, not a stuffed animal.
I have a large Winnie the Pooh bear that I was holding during the,
but
I
brought it with boyfriend.
Me. Yeah. Well, but he's not here. So Winnie the Pooh gets it.
Well,
does your boyfriend also like to wear a red crop top and no pants?
Yes, actually.
Yes.
Weirdly enough, actually. Yeah.
Matt, you're single.
Oh yeah.
And, ready to mingle, right?
I'm open to whatever, I guess.
Well, did seeing the royal wedding sort of, I mean, seriously, like, cause everybody's like, favorite ginger is Prince Harry.
Yeah.
And what did you feel like a little bit like lonely or a little sadness in seeing that he's tying the knot? Because there was rumors that he was gay for a while.
I wasn't upset by it at all, mostly because like white men are just not on my sexual radar for the most part. So like he can go do whatever he wants. Like, I don't know. He can marry a chainsaw and a color TV and I'll have a great day.
Who's your A game? Who's like your go-to?
Sidney Poitier?
Younger version of him, actually. And To Kill a Mockingbird, when he had the chest and the arms, don't even talk to me. But my actual live celebrity crush, I always say Taye Diggs.
Sure.
I just
does he follow you on Twitter yet?
You mean that's an option?
Everyone on Twitter.
Except for me.
You'll get there. Don't worry,
maybe
baby.
The love letters I sent him when I was 10 were too much. Maybe that's why. Maybe I'm on a list.
He was in Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
I just watched a lot of Private Practice.
Yeah.
I'm simple. I fall in love like a Midwestern white woman. I'm very simple.
Yeah, I like, African-American actors who have good diction.
I was really waiting for the end of that sentence. Diction. You lingered on that. Dick. You really did. I like African-American actors with
like
good
James
dick.
Earl Jones, yeah. Who was like...
Who's very Eartha Kid.
Yeah.
I love African-American actors with good diction.
That was everything I needed. Everything.
So I guess there were restrictions on what people could wear to the wedding.
Oh, of course.
That makes sense.
And you couldn't wear bright colors to both Queen of England and get the memo.
She don't have to listen to nobody.
Yeah.
She wore basically what she wears all the time.
Which was like a nightgown, but whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
She's allowed to.
Who cares? I want her to have on slippers and a cigar. Yeah. Who cares?
She has the weight of the nation on her shoulders.
Exactly.
All her corgis just passed away. The last of the lineage of her dogs.
I'm surprised she left the throne. It's going to be hard for her. She has to sit.
I'm actually actively angry about Oprah had to change her outfit. Did you see that?
No.
She realized the day before that she her outfit that she had planned to wear that was cream, like a beige cream, looked too white in photos. And so Stella McCartney's team put together an outfit like overnight, like worked to make a new dress and hat for her. She posted about it on Instagram. But the photo of her that went around of her walking into the wedding, right behind her is a basic white woman wearing basically white. And I'm like, okay, so Oprah had to change, but that woman's over there wearing literally just eggshell.
But who's looking at that woman?
True.
Oprah is the only person there with $3 billion that doesn't have a scepter. So, like, I think there's a little bit more focus on
the Queen of America
her.
And the Queen of England met that day.
Exactly.
That's our UN ambassador.
And Gail was hand-sewing those buttons. She was so nervous the whole damn time. Oprah was hitting her with a cat of nine tails. It was very complicated.
Stedman sitting in the corner watching.
Stedman was... they haven't been in the same room since she got the network. She's busy. She's busy.
So Oprah definitely, she looked fantastic.
Oh, yes. With the Weight Watchers commercial. Didn't she eat four tacos in 30 seconds?
Did she meet the Queen of England? Saturday Night Live, I guess, was alluding to this, like, off-the-rails... after party. I don't know if you guys got to see that or not.
I didn't, but I would also be surprised if the Queen of England went to an after party.
Well, there's a reception that they're required to go to.
Sure. I don't think the Queen of England has a concept of weekends, nonetheless, after parties. like that. I think that's just well outside of her purview. That's a Welsh situation. She's firmly.
Well, you remember when she was visiting the United States? I think this was like mm-hmm. the early 90s. And she went into like a store or something, and a big black woman went and hugged her. And it made international news. And they're like, I just saw the Queen of England. I just had to hug her.
Yes, she did.
And people were just like, you don't hug the Queen of England.
I don't know. Hiding emotions is hard for us, okay? Have you ever heard the good old Tina Turner meet and Jackie O story?
No.
They were checking into the same hotel because they were like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why. This was a long time ago. Point being, Tina stopped her security people, dropped everything she had in her hands, and like ran across the lobby to go hug Jackie O and said, I love you so much. I love you so much. And then she saw Aristotle Onassis and said, I'm scared. And then went back to her life. Which I think is pretty much how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, watching What's Love Not Got to Do with It?
My favorite movie as a child.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it's kind of mean that they then, you know, cut Angela Bassett at the very end with the real Tina Turner. Because mm-hmm. when you're watching the entire film, you're just going, Angela is Tina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she's brilliantly acting the part.
And then they just pull the rug from under you at the end. And you're like, I've been looking at a lie this entire time. What is real?
But didn't you love like the last scene where Angela had to look ridiculous with the blonde wig for just like 10 yes. minutes? It's just like, oh.
But so the whole film kind of, you know, a lot of Tina Turner's life was lived out in hotel lobbies.
Oh, yeah.
When she left Ike Turner and, you know, when she met with her... With the record producer and made her come back, it all took place in the lobbies of hotels.
Yeah, no, everything's out in the public, so it's like people are kind of ashamed to deal with you. Because, you know, like a lot of the like female performers that came in latch on to so much, like yeah. Eartha Kitt, like Kathy Griffin, like Tina Turner, they have these weird, complicated careers with like comebacks and deaths and like the resurgences, and like everything's complicated and people are ashamed of you and don't like you, and then they love you and it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
It's
always somebody say my name.
all these women that gave in attached to, like Eartha Kitt, the Phantom of the Opera. There's just a lot of outfits, it's a lot of deaths, it's a lot of comebacks, you know.
I want to like hear Eartha Kitt doing Beyonce's songs. That would be the bridging of, you know, old school and new school.
Her doing Love on Top with the key changes would be so complicated and fascinating.
Now, Matt,
maybe it's you.
I can't.
Matt, when you perform, you don't hold back, and you put on a lot more makeup than most male-identifying comedians do.
Yeah, no, and I'm not, like, gender non-binary or, like, a they-them situation. Yeah. I'm not that complicated.
You just
want
to show them a good time.
Exactly. I'm trying to give them a show, really. Yeah. Because, like, I didn't grow up liking traditional stand-up comedy as much. That happened later. But I always loved, you know, like, the giant female performers. And maybe I can't give you the 20-part costume like Diana Ross because I don't really want to be a drag queen. I don't want to go there. But I can give you flashy kind of talk and a flashy kind of face. And so it's that sort of like, it's that kind of influence on it.
Do you think that the makeup sort of, you know, makes you more approachable to straight audiences or to even to gay male audiences?
I think that it makes it very clear that you're about to get something that you don't normally get. And that's really the point. Because I perform in dive bars and all over town on, you know, the west side. I perform in typically straight clubs. I produce a show at the Laugh Factory, which is like as mainstream as it gets. And gay men don't really do stand up that much. I mean, I met Cody doing a show and it was just like, sister, like, they're like, we're never there. Like, there's so few of us. And so I needed to find my way to make it very, very clear before I even had a word out of my mouth. Cause they get to judge you before you say anything.
Yeah.
Okay. You're in for something different.
Well, if you're cute, they judge you for being relying on your looks. Mm-hmm. If you're not cute, they judge you because you don't fit a certain beauty expectation.
Yeah.
If you're too feminine, there's always some reason to reject you.
And so I'm going way outside all that shit. So like, don't even think about that.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like superseding the whole
thing. And where is this courage coming from for you? Cause it's like a lot of the people would just kind of cower in fear and you're just like, let's just boldly go.
Well, like, I don't know. I'm like more inspired by like the old school gays that were like the black drag queens that were throwing bricks at Stonewall. Like, I don't know. Cause I don't think this generation nation has that kind of specific fight as commonly displayed, gay specific.
We're too busy shopping for our next outfit so we can make a audition video for RuPaul's Drag Race.
Acceptance is pacifying. And but when you have, you know, 25 other minority statuses that are ruling your life like I do, you know, the gay thing's not the most complicated thing going on here, so there's other shit.
Well, you sound know? And look like Amanda Lepore.
Which is its own with no plastic surgery. And also
nice tits, by the way.
Thank you. I'm never gonna have sex again after this podcast.
Because your ego's so big.
Because swollen. You're saying I look like Amanda.
No, but so what's your heritage? Like, what's your obstacles or identity here?
I'm mixed. I'm black and I'm white, and I grew up like really, really poor, and then not with like traditional parent situation at all. And so just coming here, paying my own bills, paying for everything myself, doing this all on my own, both college and stand up and working two jobs and making it all happen. It's hustle. And so, you know, the gay thing's not the most complicated thing. Mm-hmm. So it has to be there on stage and I have to focus on that. But so I'll try to do that in a look. I'll try to do that in the opener. And then we can talk about my family and the news and whatever else.
And then you won a dance scholarship and traveled around the Middle East picking up different languages until you were blacklisted by Lady Bird Johnson for speaking out against the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And then later you did were Catwoman and Batman and...
And you're missing the part when movie. I danced to the Paris Opera in a banana skirt. You're missing that part.
That's a different African-American entertainer.
Yeah, and I also...
That's Josephine Baker.
And I also did get punched in the eye by a guy with a bowl cut for 17 years. I love Tina. We have everything in common.
But really, everything. Like, in a lot of ways, you can relate to, like I do, to Eartha Kitt's life story. Very much.
Oh, yeah, because she grew up mixed race. Family did not really want her, know what to do with her. Grew up very excluded, very outside. And I vibe with that. And kind of it feeds, you know, the performer.
Do you know what the racial slur they used to use on her, and then she used it in one of her books?
No.
They called me a yellow girl. Because she was not black nor white in those days. And then, or Tuesday's child.
Okay.
Which I'm like, why? Tuesday's a bad day of the week? I guess. Not a bad day. Monday's a bad day.
I mean, that's similar to all of those like old school ways to say gay person without saying gay person. Like, oh yeah, he's a gentleman with a long handshake. It's like, what does that even mean?
He's musical. He's unusually graceful. That was a Dick Cavett used to say that a lot. That was his favorite.
Yes. He prefers the company of men.
I love Dick Cavett.
Oh, do you know the Woody Allen story with that?
Yes.
Okay, good. We have the same references. Fausto, you seem lost.
Explain it to me.
Okay, so Cody and I are stand-up comedy nerds because, you know, you are what you eat, and that's a microphone. And so Dick Cavett and Woody Allen were both giant legends now, but were, like, building their stand-up careers in the 60s. And after Dick Cavett got off stage, his, like, first interaction with Woody Allen was Woody just walking up to him, "Nice joke, Dick Cavett." And then just walked away.
Whoa. So Woody's always kind of been an asshole.
He's never been a normal fellow. I don't think that's ever been a service he offered.
Well, it's kind of like Bill Cosby was like calling up like Eddie Murphy and telling them to clean up his act. But in the meantime,
you cannot say the N-word. You know, all that stupidity.
And then in the meanwhile, he's like, you know, poisoning women with their drinks and sexually attacking them.
Damn good on stage, though. I mean, I hate being that guy. Like, he's an awful human being, but, like, the stage work was fabulous.
Well, that's how he was able to get away with so much of what he did, you know?
Because
he was
an excellent entertainer. No one's looking for details. And you're making a lot of people a lot of money. No one's looking for details.
That's true.
But when you're 80 and you outlive your usefulness, then they can throw you in jail when they should have done it 50 years ago.
That's why I tell everybody, just show up for work. You know? But it's true, like a lot of people just they're like, oh, I don't know why my life isn't going well and all that stuff. I'm like, were you on time? And they're like, no. Did you even show up? No.
There you go.
Just show up. 90% of life is just getting out of the door and get there.
Why does anybody book me? Did you leave your house? No. Well.
Yeah, I mean, true. Yeah, if Donald Trump was doing more of his actual job, I think we probably wouldn't be doing as much worrying about it. You know, if you it's smoke screen with actual work. There you go.
But jeez. You guys have you have a very strong work ethic, the two of you.
Cody is the queen, king, prince and pauper of work ethic. I don't know what anybody's talking about.
No. Now we're gonna have a hustle, a polite hustle fight. No, you're a hustler.
Sure, sure.
In all the directions.
I wish I could sell pussy, but that's a different convo.
Yeah. But I mean, both of you guys are very much like always writing, developing material.
Have
like
to.
You mm-hmm. just did like a whole set about the Royals.
Yeah, no, I did. I just had a show last night, and then the comics afterwards are like, how did you have 4 tight minutes over shit that happened this morning? How did you have all that figured out?
Because you didn't sleep.
And it's like, you don't sleep. And like when you've been doing stand up at a certain point, whether it's stand up or music or whatever, when you're creating new shit, after a while, you kind of know the directions you turn.
Right.
You know where you're going to go. You know how you work. And so like, if it's something that I care about, it's a lot easier to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say like the work, I do have like a lot of material and a lot of people don't feel compelled to. Like I did half an hour a couple months ago, which is like weird for someone who's only been doing stand up a year and a half. That's just strange.
Mm-hmm. So you're like the Valentina of stand up comedy.
I don't get that.
I just started doing drag 6 months ago.
But yeah, I mean, writing stand-up's a lot like being a journalist. Like after a while, you figure out your breaks pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're a journalist, you can see something and immediately know what the story is going to be and how you're going to need to do that direction. And stand-up's kind of similar. Once you kind of know how you break a joke, then you can kind of just start doing that a little bit quicker.
And especially with the kind of stand-up that we do, a lot of it I think can happen just in the initial observation or the initial experience. Like it is like journalism; you get all your info from the scene. Like the crime scene's all what you need, kind of.
Yeah.
I just asked Jeffrey J to write jokes for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That works pretty well,
I
too.
Just call him, like, write a joke. I can't think of anything. And he's like, I'm busy.
Well, there is always, like, the calling the friends or the texting or, like, while you're at lunch. Hey, do you have anything weird about a monkey at the zoo? Because, like, I have this new thing. And, like, it's always, like, have you tried something like this? You know, even if they're not helping you write it directly, you will run shit by people that you don't think are assholes.
What are some of the, like, material that you developed for the royal wedding that didn't make it onto your stage? Like, you were like, this is not a good idea to think.
Nothing actually really, and this is so, I feel like an asshole.
Everything was good.
It was all brilliant.
For what I wrote down for that, everything that I had together with that 3-minute rant worked. But a lot of times there's stuff that you will try and then everyone's picking their nose saying, who's this asshole? And it doesn't make sense to anyone but you.
Well, did you start off by like, I know you guys don't care about the royal wedding or, cause a lot of people like on the internet, they're all just weigh in and saying like, I'm not interested in this.
Oh no, I immediately said, I'm talking about the royal wedding and you can't stop me. I'm gay. This is my culture. You asked for it. No. I don't give them the choice. It's not up to them. I'm on stage. Like, what are you talking
You're
about?
You're driving this car off the road.
Because control's all really what it's all about.
Right.
It's all, you have to be running that
Who was the best dressed at the wedding, do you think?
Oh, like the mother. Sexer.
The mother.
Doria. Because it was simple green. The nose ring was perfect. She just looked like herself, but fit the situation at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is always what you want to do when you're doing stuff that's not like normal for you. Still bring who you are to it.
And is David Beckham really sexy or is he just overrated?
10 years ago.
I'm not into it.
Yeah, he strikes me as, you know, here we live nearby a gay beach. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, there's these people who really enjoy spending too much time in the sun. We call them the lizards.
They're bronze artificially, is what
And
we
I'm
might
like,
say.
David Beckham's dermatologist. I do not want to be David Beckham's dermatologist because he looks desiccated.
I feel like he and Victoria both have their own body dysmorphic disorders that they're working out on each other.
Because she
has these weird grapefruit breast implants that she's very proud of. And like, she had the Kate Gosselin haircut before Kate Gosselin. And like, I don't know
That's
her.
Right.
They're both very complicated. But David Beckham has a nice butt and he can do whatever he wants with his life.
So is this kind of like equivalent to having Obama as president, is that Meghan Markle, you know, the sort of fresh black royal?
Well, all she had to do was fuck somebody. She didn't go to law school and achieve nothing. So I don't know about all that.
Well, she's achieved a lot as a philanthropist, as
an
actress.
Do you realize how many boring white guys in their 30s I have fucked because they're rich and give me jewelry? Like, she's not, like, like, I'd say it's nice to be invited in the room, but like, what are you going to do with it?
Are you a yacht babe? Do you spend like your times on yachts? And
if
that's what people were dismissing Megan.
Because she was on yachts?
Yeah, they were like, she's a yacht babe. That's what she did.
Oh, I didn't realize that yacht babe was a thing now.
Okay.
Like a booth babe is a very attractive woman or man who stands at a expo to try to get people to sign up, you know, for products or email lists.
Okay.
Yacht babe is basically like Melania Trump, is somebody who's hired to just create ambience at an expensive yacht. Right.
I aspire to that because, like, before I did stand up, like, my artistic thing was I trained to be a classical singer for 6-7 years. And, like, Maria Callas was, like, the American soprano, and she was living on a yacht with Aristotle Onassis for 10 years doing whatever she wanted in Greece. So
you're like Matteo Lane. You have a operatic training.
Yeah, I sang.
What do you mean by you?
I don't know.
You're dismissing that, or you don't
like it? No, because I've heard that comparison like 3 times in a week, and so it's just like...
triggering you.
No, it's not triggering. It's just like, this is a consistent thing.
Like, well, that's good. Matteo's doing well. Like, drag queens are all waiting. Bobby Drag Queen is standing right behind him with a frying pan ready to whack him to steal his gigs.
I am not getting on late night anytime soon, so yeah. Go.
He's doing really well, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's
got to... And he actually returns people's calls. Unlike some other people. Bob. Cameron.
I say that there are very few men that are, you know, gay men that do stand up that are in the mainstream. And so whoever's out there is helping me.
We just taped an interview with Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall. He said it was very emotionally challenging for him as an openly gay comedian to perform for other gay men in the audience.
Oh, I hate it.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it. Cody, how do you feel?
No, that's not great. Yeah.
Still the problem.
James Adomian and I had a very long conversation about that one time, and I know he and Guy Branum have also talked about that a lot. Gay men have never liked... I mean, I performed at the gay show at the Laugh Factory one time. I was the feature, and then there were two straight headliners. And one section of the audience absolutely loved me, and everybody else could not have cared less. And then the two straight people went on and made a bunch of, like, sex jokes, and everybody went wild. And then the group afterwards came up to me, and they were a Shakespeare company that had just wrapped a play, and it was like, of course.
Oh.
Yeah. theater and opera gays like me, but yeah, I don't do enough bathhouse humor, I guess.
Well, does it matter for gay men to like us as entertainers, or
as a comedian, you need to be liked
by everybody
on some level by your audience?
I mean that's my problem. It's like, I would like to feel like I'm a part of the community in some aspect, you know. I was a child who grew up gay and Victorian in Texas, and I've always been trying to find my tribe, and it's a never ending struggle that never seems to end.
Well, it's a problem is that you got sucked into a time vortex and you landed in the middle of the 21st century.
Yeah, as everybody knows when they watch the beginning of my TV show.
Well, we were in a museum, Karma Nyberger and I, at the Chicago History Museum, and they had an exhibit of all the jackets the stock traders were wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh my God, it's Cody Melcher's closet.
Yeah, no, I you sent me a picture, and I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I own, like, that jacket. Yeah. The Chicago History Museum is fine. It has some problems. It has some typos and some historical issues. But
stealing your clothes.
I know, that would be
probably
nice.
A good idea.
That would be nice. Yeah, no, I just actually had to downsize because my closet's smaller in LA, so I just had to get rid of about 5 jackets.
Well, this similar
sacrifice.
I know, it was really
this
tough.
Similar complaint was also, like, by openly gay musicians. Mm-hmm. But I would just say, like, you know, if we're gay, unless we're strippers or drag queens, it's going to be a tough ride.
I'm very interested. I have not heard that from gay musicians before, because I always feel like music, it was always a lot more open, because so many drag queens will sing and do that as part of their act. And, like, a lot of successful lesbian musicians, like,
we're not talking about lesbians. We're talking about gay, cisgender men. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The lesbians are, if you fart, they'll buy it.
Oh, well, because lesbians are very successful. I mean, there would not have been the gay equivalent of a Melissa Etheridge in 1988.
Sure.
No, it just wouldn't have happened. And there still has not been a gay man that's been successful on the level of an Ellen or a Rosie O'Donnell. I will never have $100 million like they do. That's just not in the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and certainly, like, their success is also an anomaly in itself.
Oh, yeah.
We're just waiting. You know, as Margaret Cho says, we're the ones we're waiting for.
Yes. You have to do the stuff that you want to see.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
Harness the power of love.
The secret is within all of us. Oh, God. I don't think Amanda would say anything that deep.
Well, I really, I'm sorry I didn't catch his name. The minister who did
Jeremiah Wright.
Jeremiah Wright.
God damn America.
I am so ready for that. He's in England. He's safe there. We don't care.
So we were talking in this podcast earlier about a rumor that they were rebooting The Golden Girls with an all-gay senior cast. And Leslie Jordan was tied to the project, as well as Harvey Fierstein.
He will be Sophia.
Let's be clear. Leslie Jordan chained himself to the project.
I think it is actually a tree in a rainforest.
Yeah, no, he's not just tied. He's full. He's integrated. He's become part of it. He's the swamp thing of the project.
So the new sitcom's been revealed. It's called The Cool Kids, and it does not have Harvey Fierstein involved, but there's rumor that he might be making guest appearance.
I need him to write the thing. That would make me happy. Because, like, Golden Girls, when it was, you know, happening in the 80s and 90s, was all written by gay men. Mm-hmm. So, like, it makes sense to have, like, people of that created it to be showing it.
So, Roseanne's Martin Mull, who played a gay character on Roseanne, and Leslie Jordan and David Alan Greer, who played Antoine Merriweather in Living Color, Men on Film. You guys remember them.
Yeah.
Hated it. Two snaps up.
With the mascots.
He got his lingo from starring in Dreamgirls on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. And
did you know that?
I did not know that, but it so makes sense because, like, there was, like, in the early 90s, like, between With Paris Is Burning and everything, like, we were starting to poke out into the comedy, into the culture.
Mm-hmm. I just forgot how much Men on Film introduced terminology into the mainstream, like reading somebody to film.
Yeah, black gay vocab kind of became the world, and it is now.
Yeah,
you're all welcome.
Like you did something. You weren't even born then.
I was learning it on the way here, but that's not the point.
Yeah,
you read the brochure.
It's like it's very similar but oppositional to Kenneth Williams. I don't know if you know Kenneth Williams, the British comedian who died a while ago. But he was gay. But he was very like Paul Lynde, where everybody was like, he's very obviously gay, but everybody's like, oh, he can't be gay.
Sure.
But he did a radio show where he played a character who everyone thought was speaking gibberish, but he was literally just speaking Polari the whole time, which is the gay slang language from the Victorian era.
Oh, wow.
And so he was just doing actual gay slang language. And so gay people were picking up on what he was doing. And he was doing it on BBC radio.
He's probably talking about, like, rimming the president and, like, but it was in Polari, so no one knew. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we developed that language, is so we can communicate. You know? But like terms like queen, tea room, what's a tea, chicken,
well,
drag.
I even have a bit about
a lot,
like,
of that stuff comes from Polari.
I mean, I even have a bit about, like, how the hookup culture has, like, changed over time. Like, I always say I'm a gay guy from the wrong era, because, like, 1910 Europe, where all you had to do is make eye contact and then it'd go from there. You didn't need to talk. You didn't need no words. You just suck his dick behind a bush. Like, it was simple.
I hooked up with a guy at the Max Ernst exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art in Berlin in 1996.
I am so
in the bathroom.
So proud of you.
He had a big old dick. And you know how he picked me up?
How?
Because I had seen all this art already, so I was a little bit bored. Mm-hmm. And he's just this, like, you know, tall, Aryan, blonde, muscle guy.
Yeah.
And he starts winking at me. And I was like, it looked like a Laurel and Hardy skit.
Did he speak English?
No.
Oh, because German guys are hot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people say the war changed Berlin, but no, it's still the same.
And so he just, like, starts nodding, like, follow me. And so I go down in the basement of the Museum of Modern Art in Berlin, and there's this little bathrooms there, and he had some shopping bags, and he just put them so people couldn't see.
Travels with them.
Yeah. He was like, I guess that was his fetish.
Yeah.
All these disembodied, you know, because modernist paintings are all disembodied body parts.
I just think gay guys like fucking in public. That's just, like, our thing.
It's more convenient, because when you're done, you just flush the toilet and leave.
Exactly. We like a public bathroom, because every time I'm in one, I feel like if I see a man zip up his pants, I have to help.
It's like when you go to a Chinese food restaurant, right? And it's like they have the tablecloths are all plastic, and there's about 10 of them stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
And when you're done eating, they just take the top tablecloth and throw it away, but leave all the other tablecloths below. It's like wearing a condom. When you dunk fucking somebody, you just take the condom off, and all the poop on your dick gets off.
Oh, my God.
You take the condom off, and you push them out the window, and everyone's gone.
Everybody's done. You can move forward.
I am so far out of my element in this conversation. I do not carry around enough handkerchiefs to have sex in public. I'm sorry. I can't.
That's what condoms, like, work best, is, like, it is a manner of, you know, we could get on PrEP, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you should get on PrEP if you're sexually active.
Yes.
You're on PrEP, right? Everybody's on PrEP here?
No.
Get that blue pill, honey.
It's June, and I've had sex like 3 times this year. I'm busy.
That only takes one time to become HIV positive, you know?
Listen, we all gamble. I come from a family.
You can go to Howard Brown right now in Chicago and just say, I'm gay, and they just shove you a bottle of pills in your head.
We all gamble.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have sex often enough to just, like, worry about it. And I'm safe, but, like, I just, normally, if I'm like, I need to start doing some fucking, it's like, oh, okay, I'm not booked enough. Like, I have other things I need to work on more.
Yeah.
Oh, so you feel like if you're not busy enough, you're going to start acting out sexually?
No, I just feel like, no, when I am in the position where, like, you know what I need right now at 20 years old in the middle of college? I need a boyfriend. When I start getting those stupid thoughts, it's time to start writing more.
Oh, yeah. Honey. And I'm not having sex because I wear shorts now.
Oh, Cody, I love you.
You have gorgeous legs. You have a personal trainer. You exercise.
I don't have a personal trainer anymore. I just cry.
You fired him?
I moved to Los Angeles. He didn't come with me.
Is it expensive
to
have
an extra suitcase?
I heard that, like, in L.A., all the personal trainers are, like, 6 times more expensive, and the gyms are really expensive.
Oh, sure. But, I mean, also in L.A., you could, like, throw a rock and hit a personal trainer, so it's not that hard.
Exactly.
Oh. And they're sliding scale, you know what I mean?
they also jack you off like a masseuse. That's what you're trying to say.
They're a gentleman with a long handshake.
They say that, like, a high number of clients have sex with their personal trainers. Not even for... You know, for sex work, but just because they fall in love with each other.
Oh, sure. It's like a therapist. You imprint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be that close with anybody. No. I know. No.
Oh, I know.
Your heart will break, Matt. Your hard heart will soften one day.
Give me time.
And your Prince Ginger Harry will come and sweep you off your feet and make you into a royal bitch.
I don't know about all that. I don't think I have it in me. We'll see.
You will soon.
We'll see. That was beautiful. You never make a dirty joke. Thank you. I needed all of that. Thank you. So I'm the vulgar one.
The Cool Kids has Vicki Lawrence from Mama's Family.
Yes.
Carol Burnett. And she plays the bully who moves into the senior citizens' homes and tries to break the group of Martin Mull, Leslie Jordan, and David Alan Grier.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm also just happy that Martin Mull's getting work again, because I'm not lying. He is one of my favorite comedians of all time, and people do not talk about his albums enough, and he's amazing. So
I forgot that he was a stand-up. I know him from his acting.
I have all of his stuff on vinyl.
Wow.
I love him.
So
he's
amazing.
He was
like a big stand-up back in the 70s, 80s?
Yeah, well, he's just a very smart, very off-kilter, weird comic. Like, he's one of Steve Martin's favorite people.
Okay.
And so if you're on that track...
Okay, that's awesome.
Melissa McCarthy, Brian Henson, the son of Jim Henson and his Muppets, and Maya Rudolph are starring in a film called The Happy Time Murders.
Well, a pedantic note for the audience. Yeah. You cannot refer to the Henson puppets as Muppets, because the Disney company owns the word Muppet.
That's right.
So
but you know what I'm talking
Henson
about.
Puppet. Oh, I know. I'm just me. So you brought me here. You bring me into the world. I'm going to make specific points about puppets.
Muppets without the M, the puppets.
Puppets.
Puppets. So I guess that, you know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Brian Henson's work.
Oh, yeah.
He's very dark and twisted. And
I love him. Yeah.
He has a great sense of humor.
He is singular.
He worked with... Patrick Bristow from Showgirls. Mm-hmm. Thrust it, Nomi, thrust it.
You love Dreamgirls.
Showgirls.
Oh, damn it. There are Dreamgirls.
They're both great films and great musicals.
Yes.
Have you ever seen Showgirls the musical? It's fantastic. So Brian Henson has worked with Patrick Bristow on a very sort of dark, twisted version of The Muppet Show called Puppet Up. And that was touring for a while. And
that's
now,
where I met him.
Yeah.
Because I saw Puppet Up and then I met him there.
Patrick
I had a
or
friend.
Brian.
No, Brian Henson. Yeah.
Okay.
And because he was also responsible for Farscape, which is a science fiction television show that was on Sci-Fi Network that is fantastic and was instrumental in my upbringing because I finally saw my people on screen, but which are alien puppets. But so I thanked him for Farscape and he shook my hand and said, "No one ever says that." And so that was my interaction with Brian Henson.
Indeed. This whole time I thought we were talking about Jim Henson. So, like, I'm really...
Matt, what do you like
I'm
to say
everywhere.
When Brian's... When Cody says, "No one ever says that."
That's the response to most things Cody says, though. It's always just like, "I'm surprised but grateful." That's always the turnaround.
Yeah, it's like that interview where... was it Oprah said to Beyonce, "Oh, you're Beyonce." And Beyonce just goes, "Thank you."
Do you guys think it's a bad idea if you're a drag queen to impersonate Beyonce in Snatch Game on, you know, this season on Drag Race? Everybody was like criticizing. They're like, "Please stop impersonating Beyonce." And Maya Rudolph does a great impersonation of, and a funny impersonation of Beyonce on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. I think that there are, you can show them that you're smarter than that. You know, there's just, that's like, everyone does Beyonce. Everyone does it. Do something different.
Yeah,
do,
sure.
Surprise them with Leontine Price. Give them like a 1960s opera singer. Surprise them with Esther Phillips. Give them Eartha Kitt. If you want to do like a fun black female performer, give them something weird.
Everything.
Give them
something fun. Paint with all the picture, all the crayons in the box.
Exactly.
It's so easy to do, Eartha, is it?
Right. It's a cat, darling. It's in there. It's all in there.
You have to slow down the way you talk.
Well, she's just gay Christopher Walken. Everyone's got one.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's part of AAVE. We always think of African-American vernacular English as sort of like hip-hop slang. But there's also, I call it the
Langston Hughes.
Yeah, the educated actor who over-enunciates and pronounces things like James Earl Jones.
Sidney Poitier.
Know? Well, yeah, because when you have 100 years of literary tradition
Baldwin.
Of, you know, the way that you are speaking naturally being mocked as, you know, stupid and unintelligent, maybe as an educated response, you are going to overdo everything because you don't ever want to hear that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
and
why
you want to
that.
Be heard.
Exactly.
You get what I mean, don't you?
You will understand.
I'm going to repeat myself. I'm going to repeat myself so you hear me well. You hear me well.
Yeah. Hey, look, you don't get in an Orson Welles project just half-assing it. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm, that's all
I get into an Orson Welles project to be Rita Hayworth. That's what I do.
And that's why I'm so glad that Meghan Markle's bishop, he restrained from repeating himself the way a lot of ministers do.
Well, he didn't have time for all that. He was in a hurry. Hour and a
Did
half.
You see he was on his iPad tapping his bullet points?
Memorize like, your set,
he's
dude.
My hero.
Yeah, look, I mean, if they miss something, they've got the book available to them, so they can just read it. You know, it's all there in Psalms.
Yeah, so you can watch him on YouTube if you missed it. It's really Bishop Curry, Michael Curry.
If I ever marry royalty, we're having Joyce Meyer. That's going to be my efficient. That's my televangelist.
Who is this?
Oh my! You need more Midwestern televangelism in your life. That's what you need.
Oh, is she the weird looking one on YouTube that everybody shares?
I don't know that I would say she's weird looking because that's just not a nice Christian thing to say.
Joyce Myers,
but. Yeah, she's like from St. Louis and she just believes that, God loves you and he's going to do something good for you today.
Yep.
And so you should give the most that you can.
Yeah. And, I sent that to, I sent her to, Devin Green asking her to like lip sync over her. And she says that she gets that like once a week.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
She's like a camp icon, but she's real conservative. And,
Oh yeah. Like her husband's like one of those dispensationalists that thinks like Jerusalem's where Jesus is going to come back.
Yep. Oh sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, if I ever have a celebrity wedding, I'm going to invite Joel Osteen, but I'm going to tell him the wrong church.
Did you see that? The one actor who looks like Joel Osteen managed to break into one of his, like, sermons at a stadium, and everyone's like, oh my God, you're Joel Osteen. I love you.
That's amazing.
And he, for, like, good half an hour, was going around taking pictures with people and stuff, and so finally somebody comes up and is like, because he looked like a spitting image of Joel Osteen. And it was Prince and Pauper kind of thing, you know? And they just...
Then he killed him.
Yeah, and then they call the police on him, and they're like, you're trying to break it. You're, you know, trying to harm Joel Osteen.
Because I always thought that Joel Osteen was the little boy in Witness. So, Haley Joel Osment.
Yes.
I get so many things confused. So,
Haley Joel
I see
Osteen.
White people paying a lot of money to see me preach.
They all dress like Amish people. There's a lot of corn. I'm nervous.
Matt, where can people catch you performing, doing your comedy terrorism?
Oh, yes. My gay comedy terrorism.
You can watch the bombs where?
You can watch the bombs at the Steppenwolf Theater at 8 o'clock on June 15th and 16th. I'm going to be doing Shade. And then on June...
Shade?
Yes. The Gay Pride show during Gay Pride Month.
Who else is in that?
It's like a LGBT and POC specific show that they do during Pride at Steppenwolf, which is a big theater. And I'm super excited for that. I know that...
And you're the Beyonce of the gay comedians.
It doesn't
mean anything. But.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. We're just happy to be there. It's mostly a lot of other like women and like it's more POC specific, but it's, you know.
So you're the only guy in a show with women?
I think there are a couple other guys, but I think I'm the only gay man, but I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's just me.
Oh, wow. So you have a lot riding on your shoulders.
I'm gonna do whatever I want, no matter what.
I say what I do, I'll do what I want.
I'm like Cardi B. I do what I does, and okay. Yeah, it's very simple. And then on June 20th, I'm gonna be at doing Verified Laughs at the Laugh Factory, and I produce Afterthoughts of the Laugh Factory first and third Mondays at 8 p.m. So y'all should be there as well.
And Cody Melcher, are you driving back to L.A. now, or is this the last
tomorrow.
I see you?
I'm driving back tomorrow.
It was too brief.
Back-to-back 15-hour drives.
Thank you so much for introducing these two great entertainers.
Oh, no. My absolute pleasure.
Tamara Lynn Chambers and mm-hmm. Matt Brown.
Yeah.
They both taped shows with us.
Yeah, and they're two of my best friends.
Really, your closest friends. You brought mm-hmm. me your best.
Yes. Literally.
I'm so sorry.
It was so much fun. So much fun.
This is the best you could do. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, the true shade came early.
No. That's a Men on Film. That was popularized by David Alan Greer.
Yeah.
In the early 90s.
As many things
and
were.
Paris is Burning. You know,
yeah. Shade was before Paris is Burning.
I thought that was... Oh, was that 91 or 87? Because both those numbers are jumping out.
Is Burning release date? Well, Google will solve the
exactly.
argument.
We'll know. Someone should know our gay history better than us.
Promote your.
I do, but it's all pre.
So it's August 1991. Was okay. Paris is Burning.
Okay, so it's all same time.
In Living Color.
In Living Color, when Jim Carrey was the fire marshal, I loved that sketch.
Was 1990? It was a year earlier.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah.
So. Hitting it. That was before that. Yeah.
Killing it.
And that David Alan Greer knew all this stuff and was doing that because he did Dreamgirls, the greatest musical next to The Wiz.
Oh, yes. yeah, and Diana Ross is involved in all of them because Miss Ross is the boss and it all comes back to her. I have a 10-minute story about her in my act. You should come see me.
Even though Diana Ross, I don't think she likes Dreamgirls.
No.
I feel she doesn't. She feels that it's kind of like a ripoff or like a bastardization of her life story.
I don't think she'd be mad at it if they were paying her for all of that. But being as they're not, she's angry, and I would be too. That's why she's on HSL and trying to sell perfume. Mm. Like you know, if she had Dreamgirls money, she wouldn't need
making
to.
Money.
It in the 80s and off the original musical, you make a ton of money, and then off the. Movie right. 20 years later.
I would like to hear Diana Ross sing Listen by Beyonce, you know, that they wrote for her in the film.
What, she sounded like 30 years ago? Yeah.
No, today.
Oh, have you seen the live concert footage?
No.
She plants gay guys in her audience during the Q&A to say, "You're so beautiful," and then everybody claps while she figures out what to say. That's what I say when I want a Diana Ross career. I just want people to say I'm pretty and clap.
I think you're on your way.
I'll do my best.
Move over, Diana Ross. Matt Brown's coming for you.
I do get introduced to I'm Coming Out by her a lot.
You do.
I have that. And then I close with Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I'm stealing it one day at a time.
Yeah.
Matt Brown, Cody Melcher, it's so good to hang out with you guys.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun.
Hey, guys, remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and access 14 years of amazing podcasts with some of the world's greatest LGBT comedians before they became big stars and wouldn't come on this podcast anymore. Actually, they all do. I just wanted to say, like, I actually love Cameron Esposito and what was his name? Mateo Lane.
We're playing cleanup.
Who is she?
What's his name?
Janitorial duty.
No, I just love them all, and they're really sweet and wonderful, and they do answer our calls, and they're doing super well, and it's just a really great to see all these people making lots of money and living wonderful lives in Los Angeles in swimming pools, movie stars.
With pink hair.
With pink hair. Cody Melcher.
Hey, I'm just the Donatella Versace of this podcast. That's all. I'm just hanging out
you
nearby.
You don't look like an ornament. You're fine.
I it depends on the ornament. I'm round enough.
Where are you living in L.A. right now?
Glendale. Although, kind of want to move because it's incredibly racist.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Specifically
neighbors?
To Armenian people.
Armenians?
There was just a whole vote thing that happened with literally two blocks of a city street where I had to leave a Facebook group that was just supposed to be about, like, vintage pictures because everyone was just getting way too racist against Armenian people. Like, xenophobia up the wazoo. So,
that's a heritage most people have to Google to find out what it is.
Well, you know, when you live in L.A., you get very specific about your racism. It's artisanal racism, Roy,
artisanal
right there.
Racism.
Yeah, it's farm-to-table racism.
The only thing I could think to say is too much gold. Like, how could you be mean? Like, there's nothing, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, you know.
I love the fashion, you know. I'm a big fan of, like, Turkish and European and Middle Eastern modern
Turkish guys are hot.
But it's, it, you know, people dismiss it as Eurotrash, but it's more like, I would say, I don't think there's a word for it, but it, you know, there's a, like a lot of the clothes that we, the crazy clothes that we wear on Cooking with Drag Queens, all come from that sort of school of design.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's like, if it makes us laugh, because it takes itself so serious that it looks like drag clothing, but it's meant to be butch and masculine, then I'm wearing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, my mental picture of Eurotrash is just Italian guys who wear all Ferrari-themed outfits.
Not a bad thing.
That's my favorite game to play when I'm in New York, though. I go to Little Italy and I play gay or Italian.
Are you going to be wearing suits again, or is that?
I do wear suits. I just don't wear them all the time. And I was on a road trip. I wore a suit for the show I did here on Tuesday.
What color was the suit?
It was Right Club, which is a debate show. So I was freeze versus thaw. So I wore a blue jacket, like a very dark blue jacket, and then the rest was black with a very dark blue and purple tie.
Well, Matt, Cody Melcher, my good Judy, he is gone for good. Will you take his place?
If anybody wants to put me in that position, like, I'm not in control of who books me, darling. Like, please give me stage time and a smile.
Well, Matt's then doing the makeup version of my outfit.
I can't with these jackets. I put glitter on the eyes, not the shoulders.
Well, then you shall receive it in abundance.
They gonna be getting some.
Matt, Cody, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Adios.